We're up to the 39th chapter, a short introduction. Rabbi Eliezer ben Hortinus, right? Rabbi Eliezer, we'll do a quick introduction. The Medrash begins, and those of you who wish can follow in the first chapter. I'm just summarizing the first chapter. Story about Rabbi Eliezer, the son of Hyrcanus. Hyrcanus was one of the wealthy people of the time. We're talking about the period before Rabbi Akiva. We're talking about the period approximately during the time of the destruction of the Second Temple. And Hyrcanus, this wealthy individual, had many people plowing his fields. And he had this big son named Eliezer. And Eliezer is plowing the field and he's weeping. So his father comes to him and says, "Why are you weeping? Is it because I gave you the difficult territories to plow? Because you're built so big? I'll give you easy territory to plow." And he went to the easy territory and started weeping. His father said, "What are you crying about? You're crying because I gave you the easy territory?" So he said, "No." So he said, "Then why are you crying?" He said, "Because I want to learn Torah." His father said to him, "You're 28 years old, young man. You want to learn Torah? You get married. You have children. You take them to school. And they'll learn Torah. What's this that you learn Torah at 28 years old?" For 2 weeks he couldn't eat. Elio appeared to him. He didn't know what to do with his life. He didn't know, where do you learn Torah? How do you go about getting Torah? Elio appeared to him and said, "Son of Hyrcanus, why are you crying?" He said, "Because I want to learn Torah." And Elio said to him, "If you really want to learn Torah, go up to Jerusalem to the chief rabbi, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai." Eliezer left his wealthy family, traveled up to Jerusalem, came to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, asked the people, "Who is he?" They pointed him out. He goes up to the man with the long beard, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, sits next to him and starts weeping. Now remember, Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai was our leader at the time of the destruction. Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai sees a 28-year-old man standing next to him weeping and says, "Why are you crying?" He says, "Because I want to learn Torah." So Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai says, "Whose son are you?" And Rabbi Eliezer is not going to tell him because his father was one of the most powerful, wealthiest people of the time. So he says, "You've never learned how to read Shema, how to pray, how to say Birkat HaMazon?" Eliezer says, "No." So he says, "Stand up, I'll teach you all three. I'll teach you basics. Shema, monotheism, basics of Jewish faith. I'll teach you prayer, I'll teach you benching." He's sitting and crying. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says, "Why are you crying?" He says, "I want to learn Torah." So he says to him, "Okay. Every day you come to me, I'll teach you two halachot." So, every day of the week, Eliezer would go to Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, learn two halachot, and spend the rest of the day reviewing them. Now, a week passes, and he doesn't have any food. They didn't have a cafeteria in the yeshiva. And obviously, a person who doesn't eat any normal food, he's picking up grass from the fields, that's what he's eating, he's going to have a bad smell from his mouth. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai tells him, "Son, why don't we talk at a distance?" He sets him a little bit distant from him, and Rabbi Eliezer starts crying. So he says, "Why are you crying?" He says, because you're treating me like a person who has boils. Who knows what's wrong with me? You're keeping me at such a distance." So he blessed him. He said, "Just like the smell of your mouth came before me today, so too the smell of Torah should go up from your mouth to heaven. Now tell me, whose son are you?" So he says, "I'm the son of Hyrcanus." So he says, "You're the son of great men. Why didn't you tell me? Today you're eating by me." So Eliezer says, "No, I was taken care of by my host." So he says, "Who's your host? Who are you staying by?" So he said, "Rabbi Yeshua ben Hananya, who was a very learned sage, a blacksmith. So I'm staying by him and Rabbi Yossi HaKohen, who were the top two students of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai." So he asked them, and they said, "We assumed he's been eating by you all this week." And they figured out between two of them that he had no food for the 8 days. So they took care of him from that day onward. Now Hyrcanus was very wealthy. His children told him, "Your son just ditched us all, didn't say goodbye. Go up to Jerusalem and take a vow that he should have nothing of the inheritance. Go with the rabbis, so you take a vow that can take effect and we have nothing to worry about." So Hyrcanus says, "You know what? That boy just disappeared one night. I'm doing that." He goes up to Jerusalem. And it was a great day by Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. All the elders were there. Nakdimon ben Gurion, ben Tzitzis HaKeses, ben Kalba Savua. You guys know these names, right? If you don't know them yet, you'll learn them. They were the wealthy people at the time of the destruction of the temple. Each of them had enough food to sustain all of Jerusalem for 7 years. Each one had different raw materials. So they're all sitting there, and Hyrcanus comes in. He's also one of the nobles of the time, so they make room for him up there. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says, do me a favor. And Rav Lezer comes in, bump him up to me. They send up Rav Eliezer. And Rav Lezer doesn't take a look at all the wealthy people sitting at the dais. So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says, tell us the Dvar Torah, he says to Rav Eliezer. Rav Lezer says, you know, a pit that you store water in can only give you what you put in. So I can't say anything I didn't learn from you. Everything I know, I learned from you. What am I going to teach you? So Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says, no, I'll give you a mashal. When you have a stream, that stream can overflow. That stream has so much, it never dries. Can give much more than if you just put in a cup, that you could take out much more than that cup. So too, you could say more Torah than they got at Sinai. So he says, maybe you're embarrassed for me. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai says, maybe you don't want to teach halacha because I'm here. I'm leaving. You teach the halacha. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai walks out, and Rav Eliezer is given the seat up front, and he starts teaching, and he's teaching, and he's teaching, and his face is shining, and all the students are learning, and he's shining like Moshe when he came off the mountain, and there was so much light in the room, it was like daytime. Rav Yochanan ben Zakkai snuck up behind him and kissed him on the head, and said, praised are you, Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov, that such a fine specimen came from you. So Hyrcanus, who's sitting at the dais, sees the back of this rabbi. He says, who's that rabbi that he's talking to? Who's that young man who's such a fine student here? So they told him, to your boy, to Eliezer. So he says, what do you mean, praised are you, Avram, Yitzhak, and Yaakov? That's my boy, praised am I, that my boy's talking that way. So Rabbi Eliezer turns around and he sees his dad. So he gets scared. So he sees his father standing, and he says, Abba, please sit down. I can't talk Divrei Torah when you're standing like a student here. So he says, no. I came here to take a vow that you'll get nothing from my wealth. And now that I see you like this, I'm taking a vow. Your brothers are getting nothing. You, everything they had is yours. It's over. So Rav Eliezer said, no, if I wanted wealth, God would have given it to me. I'm not interested in that. I don't need to have more in the inheritance than them. No, I'm not interested in that. And Rabbi Eliezer became one of the greatest sages in Jewish history. He's the first Tana to appear in Shas Mishnayos. He's the Rebbe of Rabbi Akiva's. You know, Rabbi Akiva is the stronghold of the oral law, and he was a student of Rabbi Eliezer's. So Rabbi Eliezer is one of the five top disciples of Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai. And we know Rabbi Yochanan ben Zakkai, the story with Vespasian, he was the leader who saved the oral law. And this Medrash, Pirkei Rabbi Eliezer, is the Medrash which stores within it much of the Midrashim that your children will learn when they go to Cheder, the basic Jewish Midrashim that Jewish children learn. So that's why we learn it every other Thursday night. We try to get it in between all the questions and answers, because I want you guys to be familiar with these Midrashim. Technically, we left off at the end of last month in the middle of the 38th chapter, but we'll get back to that. I want to begin with something fresh, the 39th chapter. And the Midrash has been discussing, the way Midrashim do, how many times God came down to planet Earth, so to speak. And the Midrash said there were 10 times, I think. And the Midrash enumerated 3, and now we're up to the 4th time. There was Sodom and Amora. There was... I don't remember the enumeration. Look back at the chapters and see. There was Sodom and Amora. What?
Which Roman emperor?
Vespasian. I don't remember. Let's begin. We're up to the 39th chapter. And the Medrash says as follows, we'll read and translate. Yeridai Revi'it, the fourth time that God came down, She'arad le'Mitzrayim, God came down to Egypt, as the verse says, oh, There were 10 times that God descended. It's in the 14th chapter. You guys could look it up if you want. Anochi yeredim cha mitzrayma. God tells Yaakov, when Yaakov discovers that his son Yosef is down in Egypt, and Yosef tells him, come down to Egypt, Yaakov is hesitant. Yaakov knows that the exile is about to begin. God tells him, go, I will go down with you. Shama Yaakov al Yosef shehu chai. Vayamerer belibo. Yaakov heard that Yosef was alive, and he started thinking. Ve'omer ech ezov eretz avotai. And he said to himself, how can I leave the land of my forefathers? Ve'et eretz molati, ve'et eretz sheshchinato shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu b'tocha. This land where I was born, this land that God is in this land. Ve'elech el eretz tme'a, I'll go into this defiled land, l'tocha avadim b'necham, where slaves are. The sons of Chum. Chum had many children. One of his children was named Mitzrayim. And that child went and established the land of Mitzrayim. Look in the Torah. Beretz she'en yirat shamayim b'neihim. To the land where there isn't the fear of God among them. That's the description of the land of Egypt. Amalu HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said to him, Yaakov, Al tira, Yaakov, fear not. Anochi ered imecha mitzrayma. I will go down with you to Egypt. Ve'anochi alcha gam alo, and I'll bring you back up. V'shama Yaakov et hadavar, and Yaakov heard it. Ve'lakach et nashav et panav et notav et benot panav ve'vi otam. He took his wives, his sons, his daughters, his granddaughters, and he brought them with him. Shenemar, the verse says, Banav, he took his sons, Uvnei Banav, his grandsons, with him he took down. Ktuv echad omer, one verse says in the enumeration of Yaakov's children, Vetina vito, that he had his 12 children, and Dina his daughter. Vechan omer, and over here the verse says, Binotav, he took his daughters, plural, with him. What other daughters did he have other than Dina? Lelamidcha, to teach you, Shebnotav shel Yaakov, Neshei Banav ayu. Yaakov had daughters, and they were his sons' wives. V'chol zaro shel Yaakov lakchu achyotehem. All of Yaakov's children married their sisters, u'sher b'saram, the extension of themselves, so to speak, meaning they were born with a twin sister, and God did that so that they'd all be able to marry within the family, k'dei shelo yitchatnu b'amei haratzot, so that they don't marry the nations. Lefichach nikru zera emet. That's why they were called the seed of truth. Shneimar kulo zera emet. Yes. I'm listening.
Is it referring to this is what happened, is they would swap, that each of the brothers would marry his half-sister? Let's say from...
Yeah.
That's what it is.
They didn't marry the girl.
It would have to be their half-sisters, because otherwise it would be one of the Sheva Mitzvos Bnei Noach. If it wasn't a half-sister. Yeah, but the Noahide laws they had to keep. It's a machlokas in the Gemara. The Medrash has two opinions. One opinion says that they met with each Shevet, with each tribe was born a twin sister, and they married, they switched twin sisters, they married one another's twins. One opinion in the Medrash says no. They married Canaanite girls, or they married other girls. So then the question is, who are these daughters that Yaakov is talking about? It says Yaakov went down with his daughters. So the Medrash says those are talking about his daughters-in-law. From here we see that a father doesn't refrain from calling his daughter-in-law his daughter. And okay.
You could read it both ways.
Yeah, but the continuation, you can't read both ways. That part you could. There's a medrash that says that Yaakov said to his children, don't let your children, meaning my grandchildren, touch my bed. Because you, I got you all girls who are not Canaanites. Your own children married Canaanite girls, and therefore I don't want my grandchildren touching my bed when I'm being carried to be buried. That's what the Medrash says. So that Medrash seems to indicate they all married girls who were not from Canaan. So that's why we say when Yehuda married Bat Ish Kenani, the daughter of a Kenani. What does Kenan mean? Kenan means merchant. So over there too, Kenan means a merchant. He didn't marry the daughter of a Kenanite.
What? Problem.
Yeah?
Why?
It's not Asur, they're just cursed. Why would we want them? For them, it wasn't Asur.
Marry some other
women. Right?
Puerto Ricans.
Right. Huh?
Go to Puerto Rico. What it, you know.
Right? Right? Correct? So, if we say that they didn't marry, if we say that the Shvatim did not marry their sisters, then they probably imported girls from elsewhere. From Aram. Right, because I think that the Medrash does say that. I think there is an opinion like that in the Medrash. We see their grandchildren did, but whether they married Canaanites or they imported girls from elsewhere, I have to look it up, I don't remember. About the Shvatim. I don't remember if the Shvatim did. Their children, it says in the Medrash, did not. Shmuel, you want something?
Yeah, Rabbi, about this Midrash thing. Like you said, like there's, I think, 3-4 different opinions on what where the daughter's like. So does this mean that, of course, like one Midrash has to be wrong and one has to be right, right? I mean, only one of those things can possibly happen. So how can you just... Like, there has to be like a midrash that you can just... It's wrong.
That's a great question.
So how can you know...
Hopefully we'll get to that later. I'm very happy you asked that, because someone sent me an email with that question. I couldn't answer him a long enough answer, but hopefully we will be able to discuss it at length, and then I'll send them the link. So Bezrat Hashem later tonight. We'll get back to that. וכשבאו לגבול מצרים נתייחסו כל הזכרים 66... When they came to the border of Egypt, so the males numbered 66 plus Yosef and his two children, so you end up with 69. The verse says, when we came down to Egypt, we numbered 70. What did God do? How did we end up with a number 70? God joined their numbers. God joined their ranks, so to speak, and that's how it was around number 70. That's what we began with, the concept that God says, I'm coming down with you. You're not going down alone. I will be with you when you go down there, to the extent that the Medrash understands that God was one of the numbers. Yeah?
Do we see an idea that the Torah, God dropped numbers anyways?
We could have said that. The Medrash is going this way. You're right. Technically, if you count Yaakov, then you do have 70. And not only that, Midrashim do round off numbers. It says in the Jerusalem Talmud, it says in other places that sometimes we round off numbers. Sure.
Did you learn the Jerusalem Talmud already?
No, but we together learned Maimonides' intro to the Sefer HaMitzvos, and Nachmanides' commentary on Maimonides' intro quotes the Jerusalem Talmud that says that they rounded off numbers. We had it here. We learned it here together in the advanced class on Thursday nights. Every other Thursday night we have an advanced class. That's one of the things we do there. No. The Rambam's intro to the Sefer HaMitzvos with Nachmanides' commentary.
Does anyone today learn Jerusalem
Talmud?
Does anyone today learn Jerusalem
Talmud?
Sure.
The man who is very well-versed
in it, he's the one who is. Okay. וכשעלו ישראל ממצרים, and when the Jews came out of Egypt, נתייחסו כל הגברים 60 ריבו חסר אחד. The men numbered 600,000 minus 1. There were 599,999 men coming out of Egypt. מה עשה הקדוש ברוך הוא? What did God do? נכנס במספרים מהם? God became a part of the count. And then they ended up being 600,000. That's the fulfillment of this verse. Anochi ered imecha mitzrayma. God tells Yaakov, I will go down to Egypt with you. Anochi alcha gamalo, and I will come out with you. Yeah. I'm with you. What's it teaching us?
What does that mean, God went down to Egypt? Was one the number, and then one guy came up?
Because we were down, and then we came up. We were in Egypt, and then we rose, Olay, made Aliyah to Eretz Israel. So that one extra man who's that final piece.
Avram lets his wife be abducted by an Egyptian king. And shortly thereafter, it is decreed upon him, your children will be abducted by an Egyptian king. Sometimes, when a person punishes, there can be a relationship where the punisher is at a distance. And the one that's being punished, well, that one has to learn the lesson. God repeatedly tells us, Imo anochi v'tzara. When you're suffering, I'm suffering. I'm there with you. When the Jews were being exiled to Babylon, Anochi ered imcha mitzrayma, the pasuk we're discussing, v'anochi ya'alcha, and I'll come up with you, gamalo. What does it say second time? The Medrash says, because the second time was the same thing. The Jews were on their way out to Babylon. They were walking in shackles. And there was one man who kept warning them this was going to happen, Yirmiyahu, the prophet Jeremiah. The Jews were standing there weeping, and they asked Yirmiyahu, what's happening? And Yirmiyahu said, to make a long story short, those of you who are here at Tisha B'Av night, we discussed the long story. Yirmiyahu said, what's happening is that God's here. Long before God exiled the Jews, God exiled himself. God took a personal exile from Jerusalem. God said, I'm leaving. God took 10 exiles before he exiled us. 10 stages of exile. And Yirmiyahu said to the Jewish people, God is here with you. He hasn't let you go. The first thing the Jews felt when the temple was destroyed and they were exiled is, it's all over. How could this happen? And Yirmiyahu says, no, God isn't punishing you from a distance. He's going into exile with you. So I think this concept is a pivotal concept. The decree was made that the Jews would have to go down to Egypt. When Yaakov mistreated his children and he gave one a garment that had a little piece of thread going around with just slightly more color than the other ones. They all got the same jacket. But Yosef got one with a pasim, one stripe going here and one stripe going there around the two arms. That was enough to make everyone jealous. You know, if everyone has a regular blue blazer and one kid gets a blue blazer with a red stripe around the bottom of the sleeve, he's got the special garment. When Yaakov did that, it was decreed they'd have to go down into Egypt to do the work of the 210 years. Again, it wasn't from a distance. God said, I'm with you. I think the message is an amazing concept.
Revelation of God will come via us being in Egypt, and then via us leaving Egypt, and then via us being in exile, via us leaving exile. What does that mean?
I think it's like the Medrash says about Yosef, V'chol ha'shuhu seh Hashem matzliach biyado, meaning there's an aspect that a person turns his back on someone else and says, whatever happens to you, I'm not interested. There's an aspect that a person says, I'm going to punish you and be there with you and watch you all the time. That's the description in Song of Songs, Mitzitz Ben HaChakim. Even as God is hiding from us, he's speaking from between the crevices, making sure everything's working out all right. Even at times when things are tough, he's keeping an eye on us. And here it says even more, he's there with us. Like the Navi Yirmiyahu himself. It says they were carrying the loads and he'd put his head under their shackles and help lift them, help carry them along. I think... No? Yeah, fair enough. I feel like you're not... You're asking something which I'm not answering and I'm not sure what it is.
No, and I remember hearing once that the mom asked a question, but I don't remember the answer. But like, what does that mean? Like, beyond Hashem, I know it says V'chazer Hashem, is it? Like, it's Gola Hashem, whatever it says V'yarad, except in the case of V'yarad Mitzrayim, where he translates it as Mamash V'yarad. But it's the same, like, what does that mean, V'yarad Hashem?
That's a different question. That's a totally different question. Go 2 or 3 years back, in the Parsha class there we discussed it, I think 2 years ago. There we discussed it. It's in the notes. You could see it. That's a Rambam Ramban. That's a totally different question. That's not this. That's something else. Yeah.
The prophets, my question is generally, how long do they live? And how did they die? And if they were prophets, was there something that they did to disappoint God to end their life? Or were they dying of natural causes? So for instance, I want to preface this saying that this, when the Tzaddikim of today and of the past, they usually die, they usually live a good amount of time. And it tends to be that they, you know, tend to die of natural causes after a certain period of time. So how did that work with the prophets?
So let's discuss that later in the question and answer. Okay? We'll get back to that business.
Right.
Here's a pen. Write it. Tell him. Well, thanks for catching it. That was close. Yeah. Okay. Let's continue.
I caught that through a flinch, by the way.
Great. Kol kavod. It is amazing. Esat tamim amu bnei Yaakov liYosef avdecha avinu. 10 times when Yaakov's children were talking to Yosef, thinking he's this Egyptian viceroy, they kept referring to their father as your slave, our father. V'shama Yosef tadva v'shatak. Yosef heard it, and he didn't protest. He was silent. Ushtika kehodaya damya. And our rule is, when you're silent, that indicates acquiescence. You agree. Lefichach nitkatzeru mechayav 10 shanim. That's why 10 years were taken off of his life. He should have lived to the ripe old age of 120. Instead, he lived to 110. What?
Right, 120.
That's why you were asking about.
But I wasn't paying attention. I'm sorry.
Yosef should have lived till 120, because he heard his brothers, when they didn't know it was Yosef, but nonetheless, he heard them say, "Our father, your slave," 10 times, and he was silent. He lost 10 years of his life.
Because he was silent, he lost 10 years of his life.
Mm-hmm.
I don't understand what that means. He was silent, so he lost 10 years of his life because he was silent. Is that, that's losing 10 years of your life is attributed to being silent because he didn't stand up?
They said 10 times they called their father, our father, your slave. So for those 10 times, he lost 10 years.
But each time was 1 year.
So similar.
And
wait, this is Yosef. I thought the time of 120 was in time of Moshe Rabbeinu. He was the one who ended the 120. Is that not correct? Who was the person who started the 120?
No, that was even
enough before. Noach. It says in the end of Parshas Bereishis, Yu Yamav Ma'aveh Slim Shana.
Was Noah?
Yeah.
It's even before Noah. It's Genesis 6.
Noah, that's what I just said. Then the Bereishis, right?
Years.
Right, but God said, being that man is sinful, right, so I will change the nature of man,
right,
and they will not usually exceed 120. I will make a standard limit of 120 to the average man. It was gradual, but it was already from the end of Bereishis.
Okay. Is it right 120?
Huh?
Is it right 120?
Right?
Yes.
Oh. Ah, he should have lived to the ripe old age of 120. Yes, Yosef should have lived to the ripe old age of 120, and instead he lived to 110.
How long did you, okay, can we go? Okay, in here, I believe they have a chronological order. I just don't know how far they go back. So maybe some could die there.
What are we looking for, Baruch?
Looking for
Yeah. How many pizzas were ordered? Not for everyone, don't worry.
So not for two slices
each? No, one. It's always one.
So when's it coming?
When's it coming? Cut.
How much is a pie?
42 shekel.
That's pretty cheap.
Is that with or without those roots?
Wait, okay, guys, maybe we'll continue? Huh? So, don't think that Yosef was negligent when it came to honoring his parents. When Yosef, who's a pretty busy man, I mean, he's running all of the Egyptian economy, all of the world is coming to get food from Egypt, and he's heading the show, and he hears his father's coming towards the border of Egypt, he took all the men with him, and he went out to greet his father. Now, he was king. He was used to having everyone greet him. He never went and greeted anyone else. The king never goes out to greet anyone else. But this teaches us that one has to view one's parent as their king, being that we're holding a week before Rosh Hashanah, so we'll pause for a minute. Guys, you call your parents yet? You wish them a good Shabbos? Person's parent is like their king. What?
Always.
Okay. Person has a responsibility to call their parents. Rabbi Pinchas Omer, Shareta Ruach HaKodesh al Yosef Mineura Ve'ad Moto. The Ruach HaKodesh settled on Yosef from his youth till his death. And now, I think, we'll discuss what is Ruach HaKodesh for a few minutes. It's a new semester, so we have to discuss it.